Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Vlad Sedler at RotoGut on the social medias, and I'm joined this evening, which happens to be the 18th of December, getting close to Christmas, Hanukkah, all the holidays, and the new year, and of course, the baseball season and fantasy baseball season. I'm joined by the one and only at Bronx Yankees 23, Mike Mager. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Vlad. Good to be with you.
Yes.
Boom, feel better.
What's that?
I said booms, feel better.
Yes, yes. Booms is on the IL, short stint IL, but he will be hopefully joining us back here soon when we record next time. Mike, it's we chat here and there, but just how are you feeling about everything? Back into the mix of writing, and you got to, three monster articles that have come out in the last 2 weeks. You're like the most published author at FTN right now. But how's it feel to be back in the game, drafting, and all that good stuff?
Feels great. Went through a period where I was very busy at work, and then moved from upstate New York to North Carolina. So that occupied pretty much all of my time for way too long. And so it feels fantastic now to get back into the swing of baseball prep. Feels great to be writing. It's part of my prep now too, is writing these articles, but I'm back in the swing of it and drafting, and it's all wonderful. Can't wait till March.
Yeah, it's about over 3 months to go, and there's so much that's going to transpire. I mean, just since we last recorded with Booms and with Phil Dussault 2 weeks ago, there have been a number of massive free agent signings. Obviously Juan Soto with the huge contract with the New York Mets. Let me ask you, how do you feel about that? I mean, did you think that there was a chance they were going to sign him? Like, what are your overall thoughts on this Juan Soto deal, and just a little projection or how you think he would do, how he's going to do with the Mets this year?
I think he's a great player. I think he's going to have a very good season. The park is not as favorable for him, but he's historically has done very well at the Mets home park. So I think he's going to have a good season. I wouldn't be dropping him down the draft board with this signing. I think I expected the Yankees to get him, and a little disappointed that he didn't. But can't complain. Obviously they offered $750 million. And if that wasn't enough, then so be it. It gives them a chance to reallocate those funds into other players, which they're already starting to do. So, it's a great signing by the Mets. The Yankees are going to be just fine.
We're going to talk about all the recent signings. We are going to look at some of the temporary parks and some of the park factor changes that are going to take effect in 2025. And we're going to talk a little bit about some early player pool thoughts, specifically on the starting pitchers. But first, obviously, we are FTNFantasy.com, as you probably know. But if you don't, our 2025 baseball draft guide is out. It is out, and it is, we cranked it out. I think it's looking pretty good. And honestly, this is just the first splash of content. We have about 15 different strategy topics, articles. The rankings are there. Projections are coming in a couple of weeks. Different tools, off-season tracker with a fantasy spin. We've got some stuff that we will be assessing around, or some fantasy help with relievers in the late rounds, around our filth metric for pitchers' arsenals. So a lot of really cool stuff. And the holiday sale that we have going on, it's 15% off either the regular or the high stakes package. And the holiday sale, it runs through January 1st, 15% off there. So go to ftnfantasy.com, get it now. I don't think they're, I'm biased, obviously, but tons of, mid and high stakes winners around the world probably aren't wrong. So, they subscribe, and you should too. Check it out, ftnfantasy.com.
Yeah, no, I think the draft guide turned out great. I was diving into it last night. Really something for everyone. A lot of, couple articles focusing on different formats. You got the injuries, the prospects, the park factors, risk, DC strategies. It's just, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. So there's a lot there.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll touch on them a little bit here and there. I know that Sarah Sanchez's article on park factors for 2025, that's actually something that there's some nuggets from there that we're going to discuss today. But I just wanted to mention, you know, because I am sort of the first line of when the articles come in, they're submitted to me. And before I get it to the editors, I kind of run through them and we kind of work and partner with our guest writers and our staff writers. But one that really, they all stood out in different ways, but there's one specifically by our guy, Jake Kuchek, that is just such an interesting topic. Like that's my point of what I'm saying here is how much I'm learning from reading these, because as I'm going through them, I'm starting to look things up. I'm digging in on things and just like the topic of, it's something that's so important because there's such a high rate, failure rate with prospects and with rookies that are getting their first cup of coffee, and just it's just amazing to be able to kind of give yourself tools and strategies to be able to break things down within specific categories or archetypes or like just ways that you can make finding what can actually be transferable into fantasy. Viability is really cool. So I just wanted to kind of point that out on Jake's prospect archetypes article.
Yeah, no, it's a great article. I mean, it's the nice thing about this draft guide too, is that it's more than just kind of giving names. There's certainly lots of recommendations in there, but it's also giving folks the tools and the strategies to implement it themselves.
Yeah, we got stuff coming out for the next, 90 days or so. I think another 60 days until pitchers and catchers report to spring training. So that'll be interesting. Hopefully no major injuries that we hear about that crop up, especially if there are injuries on guys on our draft champions teams or gladiators.
Yeah, I mean, I've already had several this offseason. I mean, I think it's kind of the price you pay for drafting early. But we're all going to get hit sooner or later.
This is true. All right, let's talk about some of the recent news and signings. And we touched on it at first, but your Yankees, they are making big, big moves. They signed one of the best ratio relievers, starting pitchers in baseball, yep. Max Fried. They traded for Devin Williams. And they just recently added Cody Bellinger, who, by the way, Bob Nightingale about a month ago on the show said was going to come to fruition. It finally happened. So how do you feel about these moves? I mean, these are some really, really big names. I mean, like, I feel like there's not a lot to worry about other than the fact that Devin Williams is going to have to shave now.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is I don't have to pay for any of these contracts. So it's not coming out of my pocket. I mean, they basically have given up very little to get three excellent players, other than money, of course. I think Devin Williams really solidifies the bullpen a lot. I mean, they lost Holmes, they lost Kingley. It allows them to have one of the best closers in baseball and then employ Weaver, who was just fantastic last season, as a high leverage guy with big strikeouts who can also come in and save a game if Williams gets hurt or needs a day off. Fried, the big thing with Fried, I think, is going to be his health. I mean, if he can pitch 160 to 180 innings, it's going to be, a really good signing. He's always had good stuff. I think having another lefty pitcher in Yankee Stadium is helpful. He keeps the ball on the ground, which also is helpful. And Bellinger, it's a player that I have not really warmed up to in the past in terms of fantasy, just because he's been so up and down. You don't know what you're getting from him. Hopefully, he's figured things out the last couple of years. And like any lefty power hitter, he's going to a fantastic park for his skills. It also gives the Yankees some more flexibility because they probably could use him in center field and they could probably use him at first base. I think the key takeaway on some of this is that I don't think they're done. They're not going to go into the season starting Oswaldo Cabrera at third base, I'm not sure they're going to go into the season with Ben Rice starting at first base. So, you know, if they get another corner outfielder, they can move Dominguez to center and put Bellinger at first. Or, you know, there's plenty of first basemen out there, free agents that they can sign. And Bregman's still out there. So, I don't know. I don't know what the next move is going to be, but there will be a next move.
I'll take them as they came from you. First of all, thank you. Thank you, Mike. A conversation I had with you about 3 weeks ago saved me from any Luke Weaver shares. So with Luke Weaver and Michael Kopech, I was already kind of on your wavelength where it just seemed like no matter how good Luke Weaver was, it just felt like the Yankees have the money. There are free agents out there and that they were just going to go after somebody. And I did read that Devin Williams was surprised that he ended up on the Yankees because he was headed to the Dodgers and the Yankees just made a better offer at the last minute. So there he is going to New York. It you know, boosts his value just a little bit, but really stinks for people holding the Luke Weaver bag in Gladiators. I don't have that feeling yet. And you know, it's going to happen, that feeling of somebody like I have a bunch of Kirby Yates and he'll go, maybe he'll get signed by the Yankees, right? Or something like that. And then he's not the closer and, you know, hey, I just blew my eighth round pick or whatever. So Devin Williams, you know, anytime that there's a move is made, there's an initial immediate market reaction. There's a bump. And I think with the real way to be able to get a feel of how what's adjusting in the market is you have to look at the Gladiator ADP, because those are the drafts that are live drafts that are happening right now. If you go to just Draft Champions and NFBC Draft Champions, if you pull up just any draft since, you know, since Thanksgiving, there are only four or five that finished. And some of those, you know, started in November. So it's you know, like you're not going to get a feel for the fact that, hey, in my draft the other day, Cody Bellinger went in the 80s, whereas beforehand he was going in the 130s. Is that the right price? I don't know. These are some of the things we're doing and we're setting. But yeah, that's my first thought as far as Devin Williams is going to get that little bit of bump where people will probably take him over Edwin Diaz and Mason Miller. But again, every draft is different and just, you know, depends on the people in it.
Yeah, no, good points. I mean, I think especially now whenever news breaks, you definitely don't want to be relying on old ADP data. The other interesting takeaway, I think, is that I haven't done Gladiators. I'm a big Draft Champions guy. And, you know, the secure closers go pretty early because there's no free agents. So they start going off in the third round and there's many taken in the third and fourth round. I think unlike prior years, there's not like a clear-cut number one. I thought it was going to be Class A and it started that way. But I've done a bunch of drafts where he has not been the first closer off the board. And I've done drafts with Hader going early and Devin Williams and Edwin Diaz. So it's just kind of interesting. I think it's kind of a little bit of a moving target right now.
Yes. And, you know, if Class A didn't have those struggles in the playoffs, I think he would be kind of the clear one, right? Because the ratios in last year were insane. And it just makes up, I mean, under one ERA and WHIP makes up for the fact that he isn't in the Hader, Edwin Diaz, you know, Devin Williams strikeout range, you know, 35% plus like those guys. So yeah, that is interesting. And there's a good case to be made for it. It is hard for me to be clicking the Class A button in like the beginning of the third round. I'm almost, you know, when you're in that position, when you're drafting first and then you have, or, you know, if you're drafting 1 to 3 and then really the only time that you would usually be able to get Class A would be kind of like in the beginning of that third round. But if you don't do that, you kind of risk when it comes back around to you in the late 50s, early 60s, that like kind of that whole bucket of closers are gone. So I've been in drafts where even Helsley, Iglesias, all those are gone. So then you have to almost pre-plan for that and almost pivot and like, okay, who are the next guys? Am I comfortable with Ryan Walker and Lucas Ursig and those guys as my closer one?
Yeah, no, and that's tough just based on, you know, just seeing what happened with Weaver today. You just don't know about some of them. I just started Jeff Champions League this evening, and we're in the middle of the third round, and Hader, Devin Williams, and Class A were the first three taken. So wow. Class A was third. Edwin's not off the board yet, but you just don't know.
And then with the rotation, you know, obviously I'm gonna always keep saying it, but Jason R. Martinez over at Roster Resource Fangraphs does a great job, and he's very reactive. As soon as something happens, you just know he's at his laptop and he's getting it in there into Roster Resource on Fangraphs. But you know, Marcus Stroman listed there as the SP5. Listen, they could add someone else, but I really kind of feel like that's going to be Clark Schmidt's job. And I even saw a quote from Stroman saying he's fine going to middle relief, which is interesting to hear.
Yeah. I mean, I think they do a great job with Roster Resource. I don't see any way Stroman starts over Clark Schmidt. I mean, I think the Yankees would, honestly, they would love to be able to trade Stroman. I'm sure they proposed including him in certain deals, but his contract is too large. I mean, I'm sure that they would have preferred to give up Stroman over Cortez in the Devin Williams trade if they could have. But I don't know, Clark Schmidt, I thought, took a step up last season and is a much better pitcher than Stroman right now.
Absolutely. And regarding the corner infielders, I mean, I feel that it's a no-brainer. Like, I would bet money that they're going to add a Christian Walker or a Pete Alonso. And if you're looking at that lineup, that offense right now, it's already insane, like out of this world insane. And you add Christian Walker in that mix. And I mean, it's going to suck for my Jason Dominguez shares, because then he's probably going to be what, like the seventh hitter. Maybe, I mean, who knows what the Yankees are going to do with him. We've talked about it before, but they're going to add somebody like that. And, you know, I mean, that just kind of seems like the destination for Christian Walker, but he'd obviously be great in that park. I still think Pete Alonso's a shot there. I was reading that the teams that are looking at him would be like Houston, because, you know, I mean, the market for his profile is not what it used to be. But a team like, the Astros, who added Isaac Paredes and are still looking for somebody. I mean, if they don't get Bregman, then, you know, there's some that would be in there. And I saw the Nationals too are looking for somebody like that, but I still see another big move for them. And I don't know. I mean, it's not going to be the Joey Gallo type, you know, obviously, you know, Rizzo type. They're not getting one of those guys again. And then as far as the third base market, it's pretty dead. There's nobody there. They could get Gio Urshela back, but that's just a, you know, platoon, short side platoon guy. There's really nothing there outside of Bregman.
Yeah, no, and this story today was the Astros thought they had a trade going with St. Louis for Arenado, and Arenado refused to waive his no trade clause to go to Houston. It wasn't one of that's not one of the six teams he had indicated a willingness to move to. So I think Paredes is better off at third than first, and if they're not getting Arenado and if Bregman's too expensive to bring back, then I think they have to add a first baseman.
Yeah. I mean, what's going on with Arenado is I kind of know what's going on. He's driving himself to San Diego. He wants to finish his career in San Diego. He wants to go play there. I mean, obviously it's a little odd because you got Manny there, Machado at third. If you're looking at the roster now, I mean, there are guys that you know what would be all-stars on the White Sox, like this Tirso Ornelas guy, if you look into him, or even Eggy Rosario. I mean, some of his Statcast data, like, these guys are not bad hitters, but you just don't see them as part of the starting lineup here for the Padres. The White Sox, man, they'd be awesome values. But yeah, that's what I'm hearing is he, you know, there are the Dodgers, but like he wants to be in San Diego.
Yeah, it's not really a good fit for him. Like, I don't know where you put Machado.
DH. Yeah, I mean, you can't DH him. You want him for his defense. It's weird. It's a weird thing, but that's like where he, it's like, you know, that's what
I
he
think wants. Machado's days at shortstop are past.
Yeah.
Maybe Bogaerts' days at shortstop also are past. But yeah, no, that's not a great fit for them.
All right. Other teams making moves in the American League East. So much action there. What an amazing division. I'd be so stoked to be an AL East guy. The Boston Red Sox, they got their own Chris Sale in the house. Last year's massive breakout pitcher of the year, incredible fantasy value. Garrett Crochet led the league in strikeout rate among starting pitchers. He is now on the Red Sox. He is now being drafted in NFBC like crazy, man. Like it's, there is no doubt that, I mean, if he's looking good in camp, like when it comes to main event time, he's like the number three behind, you know, he jumps up ahead of Wheeler, I think, just on Boston hype alone.
Yeah, no, I can see it. Like I said, I started the Draft Champions League tonight, and Crochet went with the ninth pick of the second round. So 2-9.
Second, so 24. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about his range. Yeah. That's where he's going.
Yeah, now main events, you can see him at the 1-2 turn.
Yeah. And then this lineup with the Red Sox here, you just know they're making moves, especially you're looking at a bench right now of – it's like Nick Sogard. By the way, he's only 27. I thought the guy was much older. And you got Romy Gonzalez, kind of can do it all. But Romy Gonzalez and Rob Refsnyder are just, you know, guys on the short side of the platoon. So they got a lefty starter, opposition starter. Those are the guys that will probably be in the lineup. They would platoon with like a Willie or a Bray or a David Hamilton. But Tyler O'Neill is gone. They're going to have a healthy cast, Tristan Casas and Trevor Story back. Jaron Duran, obviously, the massive season. Sidani Rafaela, an incredible rookie season. Yoshida, hopefully good and healthy. And Rafael Devers, obviously, the star of the team. But they've got, looks like they've got some moves to make too on offense.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know it sounds like they want to trade Yoshida, and they're not happy with that contract. And I think Yoshida wants to be an outfielder, not a DH, so he would probably welcome a move. I don't know. For me, the big thing for them is they got two stud prospects, you know, Roman Anthony in the outfield, Christian Campbell at second base, and I think they want to make sure that those two either can break camp or have a spot shortly afterwards. I think they have room to move. You know, my expectation was going into the season that maybe somebody would, one of their better players would be moved for pitching. Now maybe that doesn't happen again with the Crochet pickup. But I think they probably still need another starter, and the market for free agents is crazy expensive. So I can still see a trade coming.
Yeah, I can too. So the way the roster's shaking out right now, they would hope that Lucas Giolito at some point is, you know, in a couple months in, kind of be getting back in there. But, and then, you know, Richard Fitz is a very strong prospect. I was actually talking to Nelson Souza this morning, our FTN High Stakes football guy. And he was talking about, man, a lot of hype for Fitz in Boston. So they really love the kid. Mm-hmm. Actually, he's not even all that much of a kid. He's 25. He's only half a year younger than Brian Bayo, which is interesting. But you've got, you know, Garrett Crochet at the top, Tanner Houck, who had the incredible season last year, and, you know, it seems to me like a decent deal. Bayo, not a huge fan of. Cutter Crawford, kind of getting a little back into him. He's just kind of a innings eater type of guy. And so it feels like a spot for them. I heard some, you know, they signed Michael Fulmer for the bullpen. I heard like maybe he can come in and start at some point. Garrett Whitlock is, when he's back, he had elbow surgery about 9 months ago. He's going to be sort of like a you know, middle reliever, but they'll bring him back slowly. But there does feel like another move here. I don't know if it's going to be for like a big, you know, I mean, who's out there? It's like, you know, there isn't a lot, obviously. It's outside of Burns and Jack Flaherty. It's guys you don't really want to get into. It's all the old guys like Patrick Corbin, Quintana, Verlander, Kyle Gibson. You do not want there in Fenway. Charlie Morton. So there's not a big market. It's almost like a trade makes the most sense.
Yeah, and I don't know what the status of the talks are. Maybe they're dead, but I had heard that there was at least rumors of them maybe willing to trade Casas for one of the Seattle Mariners starters.
He's troubling for me, from where I was last year, where I just thought it, like, he was like my guy. I love Tristan Casas, and I just saw so much more of him. It's not just like the personality, but there's something off with him, I think, and that kind of translates into baseball. And I don't know if he's just going to be my new sort of Tyler O'Neill. Like, I'm just waiting for it to happen all the time. And like, now every time he's there in that range, like in the around 90, 110 ADP, like Vinny Pascantino just feels so much safer. Josh Naylor feels safer. Even Caminero.
Yeah, I mean, I think Costa still has the upside. I wouldn't put too much weight into his performance last year coming back from the injury. I don't know. I think the future still looks bright for him, but I mean, I think he's a little different type of dude. But you know, so is Joey Votto. So is Zach Greinke, and they both had awesome careers. So, I don't know that it really impacts his fantasy status.
This is good. Thank you, Mike, for putting me in check there. the closer situation is interesting. You've got almost 37-year-old or oldest Chapman, who was just signed there. Liam Hendricks is coming back. He apparently, you know, they haven't quite said best shape of his life, but he looks on the up and up. So I was off the Liam Hendricks train altogether. I had him, I think, maybe 100 in my rankings past his ADP, and I just was not advising drafting him. And then when they signed Chapman, you would think I'd be even less into him. But for whatever reason, I think maybe, you know, maybe I'm kind of caught up in the quote or just like a feeling that maybe he could be okay for another year. It's, you know, it's been a while, and thinking he can kind of get back to it. But I do feel like he's a little bit less, if he's healthy, I feel like he's less troubling in the ninth inning than Chapman. I feel like Chapman's like very scary, wonky, high walk rate. And then there's Justin Slayton, who is obviously pretty solid, but he is more kind of a setup guy, but could do the job, I'm sure. But are they pretty much set there? And have you been drafting either Liam Hendricks or Aldis Chapman?
No, I might have one late Chapman share before the trade. And I think I do have a Slayton share. I've not been drafting Hendricks. He's kind of gone a little too early for me, given the uncertainty. You know, it's like, does he have the job is one question. You know, is he fully healthy the second? Can he stay healthy? Is he going to be as good now with 2 years off as he was? I mean, I think there's a better chance he is than like a starter coming back from being out for so long at that age. But yeah, I don't know that Chapman's a slam dunk either. I mean, he used to be kind of the guy you thought of as a capital C closer that would only be closing, but I think that's gone from him. I mean, he was used mostly as a setup guy last year. I mean, he had a pretty good season for him, better than some recent ones, and definitely still has the velocity. But you know, there's going to be some really ugly blown saves where he comes in the ninth inning and walks the bases loaded and people are pulling their hair out. And, you know, doing that in Boston is not the same, is a whole different level than doing it in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and it's going to be against the Yankees with Jason Dominguez hitting a grand slam off of him in the ninth. It's just another example of the importance of getting a little dirty, a little uncomfortable with the early closers in the formats that we're drafting now, in the draft champions and the gladiators. Like, you just don't want to be in the market for these guys. You're like, oh, I really need a second closer or third closer in this draft. And you're having to kind of use a higher sort of draft capital pick on like 250 overall. That's like the 16th round. It's dicey, right? Like at that point, it doesn't kind of make sense to wait a few rounds. And there are other options that have just as good of a chance, if not better, younger, healthier. So yeah, that's interesting. The Orioles, they obviously have the wall moving in a little bit there and left, and they've got Tyler O'Neill that they've added to the team, and looks like he'll be their Santander for now. They add Gary Sanchez, and then Shugano, pretty amazing pitcher doesn't have the craziest filthiest stuff, but he's like, you know, pinpoint control guy, and in Japan he's essentially been their like most consistent kind of solid starter over the last decade.
I'm still digging into him. One potential red flag in addition to his age is he has not recently been a strikeout pitcher at all, and so I'm not sure how that translates. but he's going to a good team, and he has shown pretty good stuff, and he's done great in Japan. So, I think he's certainly fantasy relevant. I wouldn't think of him as a SP1 or an SP2 type, but more middle rotation or back end type starter.
Yeah, I read something. There was Sports Info Solutions. They had a guy. Can't pull it up right now, but had a really, really strong breakdown of him. And Lance Bradowski has got one as well. So search his name on X there and check out the get in depth with it because it's important. But I think a few takeaways I had is this is something I knew a month ago when I was drafting him in wherever he was going in the 30s, 40s was, you're not drafting him for the strikeouts. You kind of wanted him to land somewhere like Seattle, San Francisco. You're giving up a little bit of that for maybe a chance for wins and potentially good ratios, because that's the one thing he's known for. He's a seasoned veteran. He's 35. His ratios have been outstanding, but he is going to be relying a little less on his, the fastball that is not his best pitch, and going to be incorporating more of that off speed stuff. And also, he's most likely going to be five and done guy, five innings. They're not going to have him be going too deep in the games. Of course, some wins could be blown there for him, but I liked getting him in drafts, getting up to this point, but I don't know where he's going to go. If he stays in that range with your David Petersons of the world, in the 300s, that's fine. If he starts getting into the 250 area with other guys, I can't think of anyone off my top of my head who's going in that range, but there's a price where it gets a little dicey. It gets a little dangerous. Yeah. You don't want him as your SP4.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think where you've been getting him is probably a fantastic price for him. Right? Those shares are looking really good now. I wouldn't jump him up too much now that he's signed.
Yeah, exactly. Dodgers, they signed Michael Conforto. Do you see full playing time for him or a platoon situation?
I guess as they're currently situated, I could see him getting a full run, but I'm curious if they sign another outfielder. I mean, is the possibility of bringing Teoscar back dead, or is that still alive? I mean, it sounds like Edmund's going to be in center, right? Center field. Would it be shocking to me if Conforto has one of his best seasons since he left the Mets? Not at all. Yeah.
Of course not. This is going to be a great season. Right. It's going to be a great season. You just know you're not getting homers. You're probably not going to have great batting average, but you can absolutely see. And not like a 2024 Teoscar Hernandez type season. Obviously, I think Teoscar's a much better hitter. I think he's absolutely solid. Andy Pius, no matter how much potential he has, he's not going to be an everyday player for the Dodgers. I really do feel strongly about that. There is a big move, another big move to be made here, whether that is a Teoscar, which I think they're still going for. I think Toronto and some other teams have been talking to him, even the Red Sox. So there's some potential there. I mean, I don't think Santander is completely out of the question. I don't even know if he's been linked to them, but it just seems like, I don't know where the money stands and everything at this point. But and then if you're kind of going
to pay him in a decade or two, right? Yeah. Just pay him in a decade. No. Don't work something exactly. Out. A million for now. Yeah.
And there are some right-handed right-handed bats, I think, that maybe would work well with Conforto. I'm trying to think in the outfield who you got out there. Mark Haina is an interesting, Max Kepler is a lefty. You know who would be nice? Randall Grichuk, man. I would love to get handsome Randall on the Dodgers and stream him on my DCs when they're playing a bunch of lefties. Hit 291.
That would be a very good platoon mix. Conforto, Grichuk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just get the feeling they're not done, but I could be wrong.
And then Blake Snell joined the team. They re-signed Blake Treinen. And Tommy Edman re-signed as well. Where are your thoughts about him at the current price? Think he goes up? Do you think he's worth it? 200-ish right now.
Yeah, I think it's a good price for him. I mean, I think he'll largely have a green light to run. I think he's not going to be at the top of the order. He's going to be more middle of the order. I like that he has at least some pop. You know, that he's not one of these five homer guys. You know, I could see him hitting 15 to 20 homers. He looked fantastic at the end of the season. And I think it's a reasonable price. Plus, you always have the possibility that he'll gain, you know, additional positional eligibility at some point in the season, whether it's second base or whatever. I think it's a very fair price for him. I have a couple of shares so far.
Yeah, I like Tommy Edman a lot. This time last year, we were both completely out, just with the wrist injury, not knowing when he was going to come back. He was one of the easiest fades that ended up working out. But, and you know, we have to remember a number six or seven or, you know, even nine hitter on the Dodgers is not the same as it is in other teams. Your run rate, RBI rate, everything is higher in a situation like that. So I think he's in a position to succeed. Hopefully has more of a kind of higher outlier batting average season, because he's hit in the 260s in the past, but you know, the last couple of years, I mean, kind of throw out most of the regular season for him last year because he'd been out of baseball for a bit, not out of baseball, but you know, out recuperating with the wrist, and just, yeah, it takes time. So yeah, I do think he's a good pick. Blake Snell, we'll talk about him in a bit when we kind of run through the pitchers. The Giants signing Willy Adames. I started working on the projections there. Little nugget as I've been researching is they're looking at basically just locking him in at the two hole is what they're doing. And there's some talk about Jung-Hoo Lee actually hitting third there. So as it stands, you look at roster resource or most places, I mean, Jung-Hoo Lee is a great leadoff man. I think we're getting a good price on him this year because of last year's injury and just missing the season. And I like him very much. But he, you know, the construction of what you're getting from him changes a little bit if that ends up being the case. I mean, he could end up starting at hitting third, and they're talking about Lamont Wade maybe against righties leadoff because he is like a super high walk rate guy. Yeah. But I don't know. There could be other moves to be made.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to figure out, what the impact will be on Adames. Personally, I have a couple of shares of him in the sixth round of a couple of DCs. I thought it was a good price for him. Those were both prior to the trade. It certainly didn't hurt Matt Chapman moving to San Francisco last year. So I think he'll still be okay. I'm curious if he's going to run again. Last year was the first year he had double-digit steals, and he broke 20. I'm not sure he's going to be running like that again. But I think it hurts his value winding up in San Francisco, but maybe not as much as some might think.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a guy that's been getting better every year. The one category that he's not going to be helpful in is going to be the batting average. So that is kind of a little bit of a sticking point. But, you know, he's going to score a boatload of runs. You know, 80 plus at the minimum, and he's healthy always and plays well, and he's hitting in worse places. Well, there aren't many worse places there than AT&T, but you know, I mean, in Tampa, and
he's just, five Tampa, yeah.
He's just a really good hitter. I don't recall. I mean, I didn't pull it up in right now, but I don't. You know, the Giants aren't a massive stolen base team. They're not like a, you know, Brewers, Diamondbacks type of team. So. But again, they're going to have him in the two hole. I think he'll be running a little bit, but I think probably in the low teens, somewhere around there makes sense. But you know, the 120 RBI is not even close to repeating. It's just not going to be possible on that team, that offense, but make it forward with, you know, with 85.
You never know. So much of it is desire. And to me, one of the most surprising stats last year was Matt Chapman. I just pulled it up. These are his stolen base totals by season. 0, 1, 1, 0, 3, 2, 4, 15.
Yeah.
How do you predict that? So who knows?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I pulled a winker Pulled a Jesse Winker, yeah. Same thing. All right. There's not much more to talk about the Giants. The Cubs, obviously some big moves there. Traded for Kyle Tucker, got rid of Cody Bellinger, added Matt Boyd to the staff. And then anybody who is like, you know, crazy, dumpster diving for the catchers, if that's your thing, and you've been stashing a bunch of Miguel Amaya shares and now you got Carson Kelly there to muck things up, then hey, this pot's for you. But Kyle Tucker, obviously, the move to Wrigley, and actually Sarah Sanchez has a part two. Her article was a Mager-esque, I guess you could say. It was very long, so long that we made it into a two-parter. There's just so much to cover. And she's going to talk a little bit. She, you know, writes for Cubs, for Cubs Bleed Blue, and goes to all the games there and very in tune to what, you know, the way the park was sort of suppressing left-handed power last year. And just like, it was crazy. But Kyle Tucker, I don't know where you have him ranked related to ADP and what changes for you with him?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I've been talking to some friends about him too. I'm definitely aware that left-handed power has been suppressed at Wrigley, although I understand last season was maybe a little colder than normal. But I don't know. He's a great player. I have him probably in the 8 to 12 range. I think maybe this hurts him a little bit, but not significantly. But I think I like them more on Houston than Chicago. I don't know about the power. One of the things that has concerned me for a couple of years with Tucker has been, you know, he is a five category guy who provides stolen bases. And he has one of the worst sprint speeds in baseball. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's like under 20th percentile last year. It was like in the 30s the last couple of years prior to that. I mean, he keeps running and he keeps running successfully. So sprint speed is by no means the be all and end all. But I wonder as he ages whether the stolen bases is still going to be, you know, 20 plus. But I also will say, digging into Tucker, is that I think people may have missed how much of a power season he was having last year. Mm-hmm. He got hurt, but he had 23 home runs in only 78 games. So, you know, you're talking about a guy who the three seasons prior had 30, 30, and 29 homers in anywhere between 140 and 157 games. And last year, 23 in only 78 games. I mean, he was having a monster season when he got hurt. So, you know, is he going to take a step up next year? I don't know. You could argue maybe he was already taking a step up last year before fouling that ball off his shin. So I'm struggling with him, to be honest. I'm curious where you are on him, because frankly, I'm having a tough time ranking him.
I kind of like him a lot. I feel like he's, weird to say, maybe even held back a little bit in Houston, like kind of getting messed with Dusty Baker, like where he was starting, and then the experience last year with the shin injury and the medical staff. And you mentioned it, he was having that massive season. He's legitimately one of the best hitters in baseball. He's a guy that, you know, if kind of things break right, a couple of guys at the top get hurt. He's you know, top 2-3 fantasy guy all, you know, for the full season. I mean, look at the plate discipline the last couple of years, like one of the few guys with, you know, he's walking as just about as much as he's striking out. In fact, last season in about 340 plate appearances, he had more walks than strikeouts. His isolated power, you know, everything beyond the single was almost 300. So it was elite. And then, you know, talk about suppressing lefty power. That applies to, you know, sort of the average hitter, right? You got some, I mean, sure, it affects everyone, but like a guy hitting the ball 92 miles per hour with a 13% barrel rate, you know, 45% hard hit rate, he's legit. You know, this is one of the best hitters in baseball. The steals, yes, I don't know how that's going to shake out. I do know the Cubs are good to run. Let's see where how are they going to shake the lineup out? If it's, you know, if they hold on to Suzuki, which looks like they probably will now that they traded Bellinger, but you've got like Ian Happ, Kyle Tucker, and Seiya Suzuki, man, that's a pretty solid 1-2-3. And yes, it's not Altuve and Yordan and Bregman where you would think the runs and the RBI take a little bit of a toll. But listen, I mean, hot summer in Wrigley for Kyle Tucker could be great. I think he can, you know, I think he is a superstar. I still really do like him. And then by the way, Ian Happ is just a guy that I've, you know, if you remember a couple of years ago on old pods with Matty Wood, like you remember, I was always, you know, everyone was loving Ian Happ and I always just had this bias against him. And the guy just gets on base. He's amazing. Yeah. Like a 13% walk rate over the last two seasons. You know, an underdog, he's got an ADP of 39 because that's obviously more points based. You get, you know, walks and doubles and all that stuff. And you got him at the top of the lineup, you know, setting the plate for Tucker and Suzuki, and then maybe Michael Bush, the lefty next, who I think is underrated too. It can be good. And then Matt Shaw, by the way, let's see if he, you know, Nico Horner being hurt kind of opens a door for him to make the team. And he's supposed to be pretty good, you know, even more than that.
Yeah, no, I think it looks like he's going to have a shot to win the third base job. And Horner will be back at second, I assume, once he's healthy enough. Happ's an underrated player. I think, and runs are an underrated category, and I could see him breaking 100, especially if he's got Tucker right behind him.
Yeah. All right, one more team, and then we'll talk about a few other things here. The New York Mets. So they're making all kinds of moves. So in addition to Juan Soto and Jose Siri, who's their new Tyrone Taylor, but I think Taylor is now I'm blanking. Is he a free agent or is he still on the Mets?
I think he's still on the Mets.
Okay. So you've got two Tyrone Taylors now. They're both righty. Yeah. They're pretty much the same guy, right? High strikeout rate, power, speed.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, Siri is a frustrating player for fantasy because the guy just whiffs all the time. But he's got an amazing glove. So I could see the Mets just putting him out in center field and telling him to grab everything.
By the way, our guy Lucas Beery has a fantastic tool, the off-season transaction tracker. It's really cool. It's an interactive sheet, data table, where basically every time somebody signs, he updates it, gives you've got the ADP listed, a sort of fantasy draftability grade score that he gives them, and then also a little note about them. So he's constantly updating that. But man, yeah, they added a whole bunch of pitchers to the mix. Obviously Clay Holmes, who's looking at 160 innings or so he thinks. You got Frankie Montas Jr. by the way, now in NFBC. That screws up my data, by the way. and then Griffin Canning to there as well, who was literally the worst pitcher in baseball last season. So it's an interesting group there, and Paul Blackburn obviously there now too.
Yeah, it's gonna be curious what they do. I mean, they got the biggest prize this season with Soto, and he will immediately help that lineup. And of course, there's still talk about maybe bringing Alonso back. But, you know, this is a team with championship aspirations. And at least as of now, I think the top six starters are Kodai Senga, who barely pitched last year, Frankie Montas, who had, you know, high ratios, David Peterson, Clay Holmes transitioning from the bullpen, Paul Blackburn, and now Griffin Canning. That's not going to cut it. So I'm curious to see what they do, because there's not, as you said, there's not that many free agent pitchers left. I'm sure they would love to bring Minaya back. He was so good for them last year. And just, I'm curious. I mean, maybe they get someone by trade, but I have to think more is coming, that this is not their starting rotation they're going to bring out on opening day.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to spend, right? Cohen will spend. Yeah. There's Pivetta, there's Flaherty. There are some guys out there, so I could see them adding another one, which Yeah, well,
and Burns.
What's that?
And Burns.
Yes, that's right. I forgot. Yeah, I kind of buried the lead there. And then on the hitting side, and I just thought of this, your auction partner, Mark is, you know, same name, even though different, you know, Mark, M-A-R-C as opposed to M-A-R-K with Vientos. And he happens to be a Mets fan. I wonder what Mark thinks about Mark Vientos, because dude, this guy, you get Soto now in front of him. I'm still surprised he's going, like, technically it's cheap, right? Isn't he kind of like a Matt Olson type now? Like, is a 40-100 season like in the cards?
Yeah, this is the part of the pod where I want to put everything on mute, but I know we can't do that. So I will say yes. Vientos is with health, he is a lock for 30, with 40 being a distinct possibility. I mean, last season he had 27 homers in 111 games, and I think they really found something there. And what's nice too is I think if they don't re-sign Alonso, then I think he's going to get moved to first base, and you'll get third base and first base.
Oh, yeah.
And I know if you have the same thought, but every time I do a DC, I'm constantly thinking that first base is feeling really weak. So getting first base eligibility on top of third base for Vientos is only going to be helpful. But yeah, I like him a lot.
And, you know, as I'm preparing VDP projections, and I was looking at the values, and they'll come out by planning to get them out before or by the new year. I hope I'm trying to do the thing where I'm not making promises, because you know, the data takes time, or working when it takes time. But I was looking, and I was like, the value on him is kind of low compared to the market, and it was just like I hadn't really adjusted for Soto yet. I hadn't done that. It was also the fact that, you know, he is a 240, 250 hitter, and he does not attempt to steal bases, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, things like that can affect the dollar value. But I did do the Soto adjustment, and then, you know, the projection is part math, and it's also part me. And it just, you know, it just makes sense. Like, I'm not going to be... It's not going to be crazy here, but it's got to be realistic. And for me, a full season, if he's healthy, a full season out of him in, you know, the 3 or 4 hole is, it's not a, you know, you don't regress here. It's not just, it's not straight math, right? You're not just doing the, oh, it'll be 33 home runs with, you know, 88 RBI. It doesn't work like that. Mark Vientos, the Yankees, his power, the guys in front of him in the lineup, that offense is, it's going to be huge. So really, at that point in the draft, usually it's just a matter of like, I really want him. It's nice. If I was a New York guy, I feel like I would want him even more. But it's like kind of what you're giving up in that range, right? Because that's sometimes where you're really kind of need a pitcher, depending on how you construct it. And if you just like take a vanity, you know, big power guy there, it's not always best for the construction.
Yeah, no, I agree. And in fact, my experience confirms that, because I've had a lot of trouble rostering him. I've been usually going for pitching, and then he's like at or near the top of my queue, and he gets taken. So I'm going to have to adjust my rankings too if I want him, I guess, because I think he's going to be a very popular player come March.
I think I probably take up 10 minutes extra of the slow draft clock every time, trying to figure out a way how I can make a, you know, like a Vientos pick work. It's funny.
I guess the lesson for both of us then is you might need a pitcher, but don't assume Vientos is going to get back to you.
Well, and, but here's the other thing. And, you know, I mean, this is kind of also dialing it back a little bit. Like, yes, first base is light and all that, but like there are different things that you might need. And if you started off with, say, you know, an Ellie De La Cruz, and maybe, you know, you're, I don't know, for extreme example, O'Neill Cruz, and you're really worried about average, then Vientos may probably not the best fit for you. It's more like a Vinny, you know, Pascantino, or just like there are guys later. So there's like, you know, there's no reason to, you know, because, oh, I love the, you know, the Mets, or just because you think he's going to hit 40 home runs, it should not be enough reason to draft him there, because think about it, he's also going to go up in price, and think about what you're giving up to go after him. So hopefully that.
Yeah, no, excellent points. I mean, he's going to give you nothing in stolen bases, so that puts you at a disadvantage. And
don't draft Vientos. Don't do it, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think people should just ignore him, really.
Just completely, just forget about him. Yeah. All right, let's roll through some, this article that Sarah wrote in the FTN Draft Guide about, changing park factors, and obviously big moves here with the A's and the Rays. Can you kind of like summarize the, the ballparks, the two ballparks, and just kind of your initial thoughts and how that's going to affect specific, players' value?
Yeah. I mean, the everything I've heard, from the Oakland park, they're going from an extreme pitcher's park to a much better hitting park. I guess it's kind of been a league average or neutral in terms of the PCL, but it still should be a definite improvement for hitters. So I definitely think it's a bump up for, these hitters. And in terms of Tampa, it's the park is also, it's not overly favorable, but it's an improvement over where they have been playing. It's basically the Yankees minor league park. So the dimensions are exactly the same as Yankee Stadium. So it will definitely benefit Rays hitters, especially the lefties. In terms of Camden Yards, they're moving the park, moving the fences in and lowering them. So they're taking the wall, and which I guess is in left field. I'm talking about left field. I should have said that. The wall was like 13 feet, and they're moving it down to like 7 or 8 feet, depending on the location. And they had moved the fences back by about 30 feet a couple of years ago, and now they're moving it back up between like 9 and 20 feet, from what I understand. So they're not going all the way back to the way things were when it was a huge hitter's park, but they're definitely making it much more hitter friendly. One of the great points that Sarah made is that, the first thought is, oh, these are becoming better hitter's parks. Let me bump up Oakland, Tampa, and Baltimore hitters. But if you're going to do that, yeah, you also have to consider the converse impact on all the pitchers on those teams who may be harmed by those moves.
Yeah, interesting on the Tampa, the park that you're familiar with, obviously, because it's the Steinbrenner Field. The fact that I didn't know this until I saw it in Sarah's article that how Major League Baseball has front loaded the race schedule. It's like 80% of their first 60 games, even more than that, are at home. So, I mean, that'll obviously help, because that's going to be rough if you're getting like shorter starts and you already have guys like Lowe and Lau who are platooning, sometimes or not hitting righties. So yeah, that's interesting.
The other piece, just one more thought on the Tampa, is that they're going from a dome to an outdoor stadium. And so, to the extent there's more, they could be subject to more rain outs, rain delays, which could also impact starting pitchers.
Yes. That's a really good point. I like that. I mean, I think the market, I feel like the market has been shying off the Rays pitchers in general, because all those guys are they're dropping a little bit, other than McClanahan. And now we're getting like innings pitch projections and thinking he can go, 140, 150. So he's starting to move up a little bit. I mean, there was a time about a month ago where you could get McClanahan in the like 12th, 13th round, like around 180, 200. Now he's going closer to 100 in the Hunter Brown, Logan Webb, Grayson Rodriguez range. So at this point, you're just kind of paying him for name brand. You're kind of hoping that it's best case scenario and that he's back to like, sharp old McClanahan.
Well, and if he's healthy in spring training and looking good, he's not stopping there. He's moving up more.
And it is a little bit of a bummer that what happened obviously for obvious reasons and unfortunately, the damage and everything. And, but just the fact that like these, it was such a great environment, the Trop, and this is really an amazing crop of pitchers. I mean, I like all these guys: Shane Boz, Ryan Pepio, Taj Bradley. I mean, it's legit. And obviously, even Jeffrey Springs, he's going to the now he's that that's rough. Now he's going to going to be living in Sacramento.
You have a pretty good pitching staff when you can afford to just kind of dump Springs for very little.
Yeah. I still like Jeffrey Springs. I don't know, at least at the price.
Yeah, no, I had a couple of shares before the trade. I'm going to have to reevaluate what I think of him now.
Yeah. Severino, I'm still off of. I just can't do it. Just, I don't care where he pitches.
I'm still shocked at how much he got as a free agent, but I guess there were other factors involved. The A's were apparently concerned about a player grievance, or I don't know what it was, but certainly paid up for him.
Yep. The A's hitters, they're obviously the top guys are quite expensive. Lawrence Butler was amazing. Brent Rooker, even more amazing. Both of these guys are going in the, what is it, sixth round, typically?
Fifth or sixth. That's right.
Have you been getting in on any of those guys? How do you feel about Lawrence? How do you feel about Rooker? Do you think he's priced properly a little bit below, a round below Schwarber and Ozuna? Or do you think he should be closer to those guys? The utility.
I still have Schwarber a little bit ahead of those guys. I guess just the production has been so consistently strong. I think Rooker's going to regress some in average, but everything else seems legit, and he's got a great chance to play there. I also think, unlike Schwarber and Ozuna, maybe Rooker has a better chance of getting outfield eligibility this coming year. Plus, he also runs a little bit, which is a nice addition. So, no, I think it's a pretty reasonable price. I have not landed on him. I have one Schwarber share, and I do not have any Ozuna yet. But I think that I wouldn't say I wouldn't say he's a bargain by any means there, but I don't think it's an overpay either. I think it's a pretty good price for him.
A couple of things. Just one side note on Schwarber, two side notes. If you played in a non-batting average league, he did qualify like outfield or whatever. Like, if you go back and look at his numbers, just go to his page, wherever it is you go to page, and just look at like what the guy has done the last three seasons. It's insane. Just as far as like overall in the league, since 2022, so the last three full seasons, only Judge and Ohtani have more homers. Only five other guys have more runs and RBI. So he's, top. I mean, he's just amazing. And he's got like the fourth highest walk, third most walks over that. He's just absolutely insane. So I just wonder sometimes, like, if him at the top of that lineup and just how good he is, and the fact that he mashes home runs, he's so such a unicorn. And if you actually have like a healthy Trey Turner and Bryce Harper, it really could be, it could be massive.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, he played 150 games last year and he scored 110 runs. And that's with Turner and Harper both having injuries. So, he provides not only the homers and ribbies, but he's always among the league leaders in homers. The average is a crapshoot. The last four seasons, 266, 218, 197, 248. So, I think you count on a weaker average and you have to build your team around it, but you're just getting so much production from those three categories that, I don't think he's overly attractive too, but I think I think it's a fair price. All those guys, it's going to be really interesting watching how they move during draft season. I can't think of any other year where we've had, when you add in Ohtani, where you've had four UT only guys going in the first five or six rounds.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And by the way, I just looked up by just like raw walks since 2022. Though this is pretty nuts. There are only three players every player in the league has 250 or less walks over the last three seasons. And it's, you know, Matt Olson's got 250 and everyone below him, it's like Ohtani, Hap, Freeman, Bregman, you know, all the usual suspects, but three guys above, this is insane. So next up for Matt Olson is a jump to 318, and that's Kyle Schwarber. And then it's Judge at 332, and then it's Juan Soto with 396. Just insane.
Yeah.
Mike, I think in honor of your articles where we sometimes make them into two parters. What if, since we kind of taken up the hour, that maybe we have you on and we do another one, maybe at an earlier time that isn't crazy East Coast. And we do our pitcher part, do like a part two of this pod.
Sure. Whenever you want, Vlad.
Awesome. Well, let me ask you another thing here. And you know, any other topics we want to cover before we head out? On Pete Fairbanks, because we're, you know, talking about Tampa, Oakland, and those. I'm not Oakland anymore, but Pete Fairbanks, what's your feel about him? I know it's hard for us to have a take on everything, but just, do you even feel comfortable clicking the draft button? Is he going to get traded? Is he healthy? Like, what's up with Tampa reliever?
Yeah, I don't trust him to stay healthy. I do think he could be traded, and I'm not sure that he's a 100% lock to be a closer on any future team. And his skills are really, really good, and he has been a fantastic pitcher when healthy, although last year I thought he looked shakier at times than he had been. So I don't have any shares of him. I have landed on Edwin Uceta a couple of times. If waiting on a second closer, he's one of the guys that I would have considered in terms of trying to piece together a second closer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like him as well. Since him, I kind of discovered a new guy who's actually been rising up the DC charts. And this Mason Montgomery kid has got some insane. I was going through our filth leaderboard and I was just like, man, whoa, what's going on with him? So there's another guy in the mix. So man, it stinks. I feel like Fairbanks has kind of got a raw deal. He's had some freak injuries really, but he's been dynamite when he's healthy and good. So I think he can, you know, handle the role, but they have other guys there that can do it, and I just don't know where else he would go.
Yeah, and then plus, you know, you always have the risk that Tampa's going to spread saves around. I feel better about Fairbanks, given that they gave him the kind of longer-term contract, that they're not concerned about that. And if healthy, he should get the vast majority of saves. But it's just, there's something that's always in the back of your mind with Fairbanks. I mean, last year, you know, his K-minus walk percent fell from 40.2% in an abbreviated 22 season. It was 26.1% in 23 and only 14.6% in 24. So I don't think he was fully healthy last year, but it was kind of the first time in a while you saw kind of some chinks in the armor. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Pulling the trigger on him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough spot.
So let me turn one around on you, just to get one pitching question in. You know, you're getting into the second, third round in DCs. You miss out on Skubal, Skeens, Wheeler, and Logan Gilbert, and then you just have a bunch of huge upside guys with huge injury risk. And so, how are you? Are you comfortable in taking guys like Sale, DeGrom, Crochet, Yamamoto, I guess, Reagan, Cease? It's a risky tier, but the upside, if they can stay healthy, is pretty enticing.
Mike, you're like a professional, because you basically perfectly queued up and teased what will be our, you know, we'll record this like soon. We'll do it in, you know, my schedule with Christmas break. I'm going to have some time, so we'll definitely make this pod happen. And but this is a perfect segue for when we get into the next one. But just to kind of touch on it now, I have been playing in that range more than I feel comfortable. It does not feel comfortable, but I mean, I don't know. Maybe this isn't the best way to look at it, but it's like, oh, these are like early DCs, you know, I'll play it safer later when, you know, yeah, you see them in spring training. Like, no, it's not comfortable taking a third round DeGrom. Sale, I don't know. I have like, that's pretty much been what I've been doing, is it's been a DeGrom, Sale, Snell, or Crochet in the third. And now you can't even really get Crochet in the third. I'm fine. I've been fine with it. And you just kind of know at some point, like the other shoe drops. But sometimes it doesn't, right? Like maybe this doesn't make sense, but it's like, it's fading the masses when everybody, you know, when your Twitter commentary is like, when you just even mentioned DeGrom, it's like, oh, isn't Pitt done anything in 5 years, blah, 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 blah. But then we saw it a little bit last year, right? Like why he's healthy now. Why is he? Yeah. I mean, otherwise you're just saying like, he's just done pitching. Like, just forget about it. He's done. I don't think he is. I think he's still maybe not, you know, Scoobal Skeens, but you know, even in the small sample that we saw last year, he kind of was. It's still Jacob DeGrom, and the upside, even with 140 innings, is fantastic. I would take that all day in the third. Listen, we could be talking a different story when it's spring training and he, you know, pulls something, or you know, oh, my elbow hurts, and you know, we've been through that before. We're kind of been sort of damaged by it before. Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough. I mean, I guess there are other ways to build teams that makes you not do that. Logan Gilbert is 5 million times safer. But again, they're all pitchers. You never know. And then tomorrow, yeah, Something happens to Gilbert, and then what?
Exactly. No, I agree. I mean, I thought Gerrit Cole was one of the safest pitchers around early in last year's DC season. And, of course, he got hurt and missed half the season. Yeah, my historically, I try to minimize risk early, and so I, you know, kind of would go for the safer pitcher and then maybe take some shots later. But you know, maybe it's a equally valid approach to go for the huge upside guy like Crochet, DeGrom, Sale, and then you know, back him up with Framber Valdez, you know, as a safer number two, and maybe that's how you piece it together. I don't know. I've landed on DeGrom and Sale once each, and it's kind of,
it looks good on paper, right?
Yeah. No. And I mean, it's riskier than I usually am comfortable doing, but the alternative is to skip over a whole bunch of pitchers. You know, if you're looking for only safe pitchers, it's a very limited pool.
Yeah, exactly. And then the risk and everything, it just gets in the comfort level. Gets even lessened the deeper you go. Like even you go into the next tier, a couple tiers down. Listen, I mean, do I think Spencer Schwalbach's going to repeat his magical rookie season or like improve on that? I don't think so. He could, but like, I don't know. I'm just not clicking it there. Joe Ryan is, you know, talent wise, I think is elite. He really is, but man, he's got, you know, the shoulder. There's just so many concerns as you sort of go down the line. All I know that's for sure is, when they inevitably all do go down, like all those, you know, top starting pitchers, we will hear from Uncle Ted. Uncle Ted will remind us, oh, I should have told you should have gone for Joey Cantillo, David Peterson, and Reese Olson.
Yep. Oh, I'm sure there'll be some folks saying that, but I don't know. I think it's going to be tough to avoid these guys this year. We'll see. But looking forward to discussing them some more at some point.
Yeah, we're going to do that. We'll do that soon. We'll have a follow-up to this one. We're going to just dive into like the top 30 starting pitchers, just really kind of get into it and talk about our favorites and everything. So any thoughts here before we head into the holidays? Parting thoughts?
No, just wishing everyone happy holidays. Get into those draft rooms. It's a lot of fun. Can't wait till March and the NFBC live events. And looking forward to hearing you and Jason back again. And hope you feel better soon.
Yes, Jason, please get well. Everybody, happy holidays. Jump in the FTN Discord. Definitely come in, check it out. Mike is in there,
yeah.
Myself, the whole team. So come hang out with us over there. The FTN Draft Guide, Fantasy Baseball Draft Guide, is out. It's on the web, on the World Wide Web. Go check it out, ftnfantasy.com. So for our to usual host, co-host Jason Anthony, for my co-host today, Mike Mager. I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next time.